Blog Talk Radio.
That's right. It's time for two guys talking about two finals and the tale of two teams, possibly in two different spaces right now. One finding success, the other not so much, but the only thing that beats a failure is a try. I'm Mike, he's Stead, and this is the Two Guys Soccer Show. As always, we are brought to you by these fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. And that was the place to be this yesterday, as we enjoyed probably what I would say would be the biggest day in U.S. soccer history. Not the most important, definitely not the most successful, but probably the biggest. Why? Because for the first time, we had both our men's and women's senior national teams playing in international finals on the same day, separated by about 10 hours. So there's only one place to start, of course, and that is with the women. Stead.
Yes, sir.
What do you think?
Well, as you know, yesterday was my anniversary, so the likelihood that I was going to be able to watch the game was slim to non-existent. But, I mean, it's from seeing highlights, it is what I expected. I mean, the U.S. were pretty dominant. I think overall, I do want to give a shout-out to probably the team with the worst luck in the tournament, with being England, which having two tying goals being called back by VAR, even if the decision was correct, that's still got to be extraordinarily frustrating. But, again, you know, it's still kind of par for the course. You know, I mean, I think it was U.S.'s World Cup to lose from the very beginning. And they played that way. They're clearly going to be the dominant force in women's soccer for the foreseeable future. And until you see the real uptick in value in the game in other parts of the world, I don't think that's really going to change. Soccer is still broadly viewed as a men's game. And I think the United States is one of the only countries where the women are actually – it's considered a larger sport for women than it is for men. And due to things such as Title IX and access to more sporting facilities and more opportunities for women in this country, I just don't see how that's really going to change. You're looking at U.S. soccer being as dominant as women's basketball. And I think it just goes to show you about how women's rights compare here to the rest of the world. Not saying the United States has it completely figured out, but you're seeing opportunities available to American women that aren't available to a lot of women throughout the world, and that's reflected in the U.S.'s sporting dominance in so many different sports, not just women's soccer. So I think that this is going to just kind of be the situation, and I think that it may taint it in some respect, because there really isn't a rival for the U.S. right now, but we'll see. You know, I mean, even though I think the FA for, or the governing body for women's soccer in the United States is definitely doing a better job than other parts of the world, they still aren't doing things correctly. They still have a lot of things to improve on. So I think if that occurs, then you're going to see a continued dominance in the sport. And plus, we have a large population, and nearly all of our women have access to play soccer. So it's just going to be more and more of that. And as a fan of the U.S. team, you should be pretty excited about that.
So there have been 8 Women's World Cups,
mm-hmm.
and the U.S. has finaled in 5 of them, and they've
mm-hmm.
won 4 of those.
Mm-hmm.
The lone loss being to Japan.
Japan
in 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They become the only team other than Germany in 01 and 05 to repeat as
mm-hmm.
World Cup champion, and they will go in next year trying to become the first women's team ever to win a gold medal after having won the World's Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And that would sort of be the one accomplishment that has seemed to escape this women's team, despite all mm-hmm. their accolades. 4 World Cups, 4 gold medals. Just the best and most dominant women's team right now.
Mm-hmm.
I am not as bullish on the future of women's soccer as you are. I think that mm-hmm. it is a great program. I do think that I wouldn't say that they were dominant. I certainly felt that they were the better team, and it looked like a matter of time. The Dutch held out as long as they could. And in the first half, the Dutch actually created a few chances for themselves. Had they gotten a couple of those shots in, that could have changed the complexion of the game. Then again, had the U.S. managed to capitalize on a couple of the chances that they had in the first half,
mm-hmm.
who knows
mm-hmm.
where this game could
right,
have
that goalie, I mean, the Netherlands goalie had a great first half performance. Yeah.
She was making some saves, a little bit of luck, a couple of crossbars.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it takes a penalty, of course, awarded by VAR.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those ones where you see it given a lot. It was a high boot inside the area.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand why that was given. It's one that you would call a foul probably 9 times out of 10 outside of the 18-yard box,
mm-hmm.
so you have to call it a foul inside the box. What I saw most that explains why the U.S. women's team won, and full credit goes to Jill Ellis, and this is a theme that I'm going to pick up on with her male counterpart, Greg Berhalter, a little bit later on, was her ability to manage. They played 21 players in this tournament, and it showed that
mm-hmm.
they were deeper because she was able to manage minutes. They did not wear down at the end of that game the way the Dutch did.
Mm-hmm.
And the Netherlands only played 16 women
mm-hmm.
in the only tournament, and I think it started the Dutch were tired. You could see in their decision-making, the way that they were late getting the balls. They didn't have the same energy that they did earlier in the tournament. And I don't think that that was a one thing. I think that was a cumulative effect. Jill Ellis was masterful at managing minutes throughout their tournament and keeping players fresh, so that they had the fitness level necessary at the end of this tournament. She took a couple of risks, starting an injured Rose Lavelle and an injured Megan Rapinoe, both of whom she knew she was going to have to sub. I think the Kelly O'Hara substitute was a little bit unexpected, but she picked up a concussion late in the first half after a really nasty head-to-head collision. And those risks paid off. It was Rapinoe with the opening penalty, and she was just as cool as ice when she stepped up and took that. She knew exactly where she was going. Classic penalty. Step up, give it a little bit of violence, and tell the keeper, hey, look, you can guess right, but you're not going to get there. And the ball was so quick on the goal so quickly that the Netherlands goalkeeper couldn't even move. And then, of course, Lavelle getting the insurance goal late in the game to put it away. I think that this was a team effort. By that, I mean this one was one that required 1 through 22 of those women.
Mm-hmm.
And full credit to Jill Ellis for taking the last 4 years to really transform the women's national team. She had inherited a lot of big names and players from Pia Sundhage, who she kind of had to keep on the team, but we've seen her move away from Abby Wambach. We've seen her move away from Hope Solo, introduce a new style of play, one that's more, that emphasizes attacking, one that has enabled them to break down teams that defended a little bit better, which was one of the issues that they had had, especially against teams like Japan and teams and that were willing to bunker in and look for those opportunities. The most clear example of this was the Olympics in 2016, in that loss to Sweden, where Sweden just defended it and waited to win it on penalties. They were able to avoid that. I think this is a team, though, that, you know, the rest of the world is catching up. We had to go through, now granted, we had to go through probably four of the best, five of the top teams in Europe to get there in consecutive games. Going through Sweden, Spain, who's definitely on the rise, France, who may be the best team in Europe right now, England, and then, oh, let's not forget, the Dutch may have only started playing about 10 years ago, but
they won the recent European champions.
They're defending European champions. So those are, and we saw that the margins in those games was not that great. Sweden was a little bit more comprehensive. Spain was a 2-1. I thought the France game was a pretty dominant performance. Even the England game at 2-1 felt like England were in it for a long time.
The England game was an interesting one. I wasn't able to watch the final, but I did watch the semifinals for both of those semifinal games. And the rise of England has been pretty remarkable when you consider that girls didn't even play soccer in the UK like at all until even the last 30 or 40 years. So in that, and to see their development and to see them play and to see they have some really, really solid young athletes on that team, and they're benefiting from superior coaching that you're going to get from just the history of the European game. But I would say the biggest threat to kind of move up and take over, maybe take over a bit more, would be England. That game in the U.S., especially the second half, they really had the U.S. on their heels a bit. That game looked like, at the start of the game, looked like U.S. was going to win that game 4-0. I mean, they were, but England just hunkered in. They didn't get rattled. Even when some shots went wide and even that early goal, they kept their composure and they really started to put it on. And they had a great finish to get their first goal in the first half. So, and then that was pretty impressive. And I will say they're bumped up. They're ranked number 3 now in the world. So this I can see England being the kind of the new challenger, but it seems like that seems to be the way it is. First it was China was the U.S.'s challenge. Then it became Germany and then it became Japan. And now it looks like it's going to be France or Germany or England again. But there seems to be like, who's going to be the new country to step up and try to knock the U.S. off of its throne. And I guess until it happens more than once, I don't know. I'm still pretty bullish on the United States, but I do get your point. And I think that I can definitely see, I would hope to see a bit more parity, especially when it comes to the winners. You're looking at the Women's World Cup, the U.S. has never finished below third. So not saying I want the U.S. to finish like in the group stage. I'm just saying having a bit more drama involved and a bit more questions when it comes to who's going to be the champion is going to be very positive for it. I do want to ask you this. Did you see Snoop Dogg's Instagram video?
I have not actually seen it. So if you have, let me know about it. I caught the headline that Snoop Dogg had a few words to say about the for the women.
Yeah.
And knowing Snoop Dogg, I feel like they are both interesting, completely insane, and not suitable for work.
Right. That's true. But he made a good point. He was talking about the pay for the women. And, of course he said, big shout out to women's soccer winning their fourth World Cup. But he said, the women are getting paid $90,000 and for winning, whereas the men, I believe if the men won, they would get $500,000 apiece. And he was like, the U.S. men haven't won anything. They never won a thing. They can't even get out of the first round. Pay these girls their money. And I know that's been pay these women too. Like, you know, pay these women their money. And I think from an international perspective, I have to concur with that. At least from the payments they're going to get from the U.S. Soccer Federation, the revenue that's being brought in by the U.S. women's team is comparable, if not more, than what revenue is being brought in for the men's team. So that pay scale, I think, should be definitely equitable, or even bend in favor of the women's players. I'm not speaking about this from a league perspective or from a club team perspective, but definitely from an international perspective. There's no reason why the U.S. women should be getting paid any less than the U.S. men, especially when you consider the type of athletes that the U.S. women are pulling versus with who the U.S. men are pulling. It really doesn't go hand in hand, and I don't think that's really an accurate comparison of the two national teams. I mean, granted, you know, I was a bit disappointed. I was out at brunch for my anniversary. We kind of spent a whole day, and they were showing the games in several places right around where we were having brunch, and there wasn't a soul there. Now, I'm wondering if it was because I'm in Washington, D.C. It's the, you know, a transient town. It's in the morning, and people just may not be up yet. But I was expecting to definitely see a bit more fanfare for the game. But it was nice to see that there was lots of watch parties going on all over the country. So maybe I was just in a spot that had too many people who were too – maybe a little bit just uninterested, and I understand that. I'm not going to begrudge anybody, but I do agree though that the pay from the Soccer Federation shouldn't even be coming into question. So kudos to the women for consistently shedding light on that inequality.
I want to bring in another voice who can help us with this one a little bit. Patrick, are you there?
Patrick, hello.
Okay, I guess his mic isn't live yet. Anyway, I think the pay issue is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one of the things that the U.S. Federation is not the alternative to pull out their pockets and claim lint right now.
Mm-hmm.
Not after this. The women have successfully brought enough attention to it that I would be surprised if there wasn't it would be the ball's in the U.S. Soccer Federation's court.
Mm-hmm.
Right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough attention. They've seen it. This is not a storm that they can weather. They can't just say, okay, well, you know, we'll hunker down for another couple of months and then it'll be status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're going to have to come up with some way to improve the per diems, the bonuses, and
mm-hmm.
the conditions. And some of the things in the lawsuit that they were highlighting was how many times they have chartered planes for men's games versus having the women fly commercial.
Yep.
You know, the number of times that the men have had to play on artificial turf versus the women.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, whatever you got going on in the background down there, turn it off.
Not a problem.
All right. So we got Patrick on the line. Coach G is a coaches high school soccer down in Florida. So you can give us a little bit of a different perspective on this. What did you see in that game? You got a lot of background noise.
Yeah, you on a plane or something?
Well, I'm kind of outside right now. I'm kind of peeking. It's my first time kind of doing this stuff, so I'm a little nervous. Even though I had a couple of drinks ahead of time, it's a little nervous, so I'll come inside real quick. So, all right, so what did I see? I saw a 4-3-3 formation, but they really didn't play a 4-3-3. They tried to play fast, and I thought it worked very well for them, especially playing high up. Pressure high up always works for a team like United States women. They had the midfield to kind of punt, pop up just a little bit higher to get that turnover to now have possession to switch the field. I like that. I like go all out to get that ball. You actually save more energy being on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive side. So the team that really controls the ball on the offensive side, the game, the longevity of them and the game is that much more. And you saw that with the U.S. A ladies all throughout this tournament. High press, go, go, go. And eventually you're just going to wear the teams down. And I felt the same way. Holland's a good team. They're the next up, becoming a team right now. But how the experience of the women and just the high pressure, it really took them out of their game. And I like that. There's a lot of things that I didn't like about the U.S. women, but we can talk about that at another time, part of the show kind of thing. But it's always good to see the women to do so much better. I heard about the AstroTurf grass and stuff like that. Down here in Florida, especially in Tampa, they have it everywhere. It is so darn hot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been so much studies out there that it's counterproductive with the turf and the rubber pellets and the cancer and blah, 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 blah that goes with it, that the men do actually have a better opportunity to play on more grass fields consistently compared to the women. And I agree with the women. I think equal pay is completely different. I kind of caught in a little bit what you guys were saying about the money, the revenues, all that type of stuff. It's apples and oranges for the men and the women. The women will never, and I hate to say it, the women will never get paid to the quality of the men pay right now. Give it about, another 50 years or so, but the women have more trophies, more everything, more Hall of Famers about to happen, more just the winning culture. What they're doing to America and the women's soccer here in America, I would say is a heck of a lot more relevant than what the men do. Because I believe, especially down here in the high school, the boys aren't really watching the MLS. The boys are watching, like what we do. I'm a big, huge Arsenal fan, stuff like that.
Yeah,
I'm watching my English soccer. I'm watching especially down here, being a lot of Latinos. We have a lot of Barcelona. We have a lot of Madrid fans, stuff like that. They are not watching MLS.
No.
I think the women here have such a great opportunity if an ESPN is kind of signing them on right now. But I think the women have such a huge upside on them. But they have to be playing on the actual grass field just like the men are. You have to keep the quality the same, or the equality the same on both sides. Again, the pay is always going to be different. So I don't know where you guys are in the conversation. I don't know if you guys talked about
yeah,
that.
I was more talking about
all or just,
yeah. I was talking about pay solely from a U.S. soccer perspective. I wasn't speaking about it from a sponsorship perspective or from a league issue because, you know, I mean, this happens every 4 years where you get the euphoria from every couple of years after, because, you know, you get the Olympics or after the World Cup where you get this euphoria and how the women's game's going to explode and everything like that. But, you know, there's a soccer plex not too far from where Mike and I live. And they've had that professional women's league. They're lucky to get 2,000 people in there to watch women's soccer games. So, and even MLS. I mean, I am doing a soccer podcast. I watch MLS when there isn't another professional European league on. That's when I watch MLS. So, the revenue's never going to equal it from that perspective. I was more speaking from simply just from a federation perspective.
Bonuses. FIFA needs to do a better job.
Because I don't think the women are ever going to get paid the same as the men, simply because also the game is just too big globally, and the U.S. men just aren't aren't as active globally in that same respect. So it's just not going to be the same. And it's always going to be apples and oranges. And to be honest, a lot of the people who are beating this drum for women's soccer and equal pay have probably watched. Probably never seen a U.S. game that wasn't an international game. And even then, I probably only watched half of it anyway.
If I got bored or whatever. Yeah, I agree.
One thing I want to bring up with you, Coach, is this. Going forward, it's a lot about development and how much investment the U.S. Federation is going to continue to put into women's soccer and developing youth players. We have the college system, which works well, but Europe has the European model, and they've got 15 and 16-year-old girls playing in Women's Champions League matches. Is that level of competition that we're seeing amongst the European nations right now? You know, you've got Real Madrid and Manchester United both in the next 2 years introducing women's teams. With the backing of a club like that, you know the money is there. You know the sponsorship is there. You know the opportunity is there. Does the U.S. Soccer Federation need to move away from keeping the women here playing in the NWSL and allow them to go to Europe to play?
If they don't do that,
do they risk falling behind? Yeah, if they don't change the way we develop, or at least continue to put in as much money, the same proportion of money to the rest of the world. You know, we spend more on it. If we don't do that, do we risk falling behind?
Yeah.
Because I think the European teams are catching us.
And they are, and absolutely, and this is why. If you look at college rosters, a lot of them are going to be national team players for other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Here at University of Southern Florida, I think there's some Colombians, and I think one or two maybe Venezuelans that play on the national team. Don't quote me on that. But I know there are national team players that play on this college team. And if that's so, so throughout the world, they're coming to America, but the ones that are done with collegiate or college, they're going back. So it's going to be a slow process here in America for the women because the competition, just like the men, are over in Europe. So to answer your question, yes, I would love if anyone and everyone right now in 2019, men and women, go to Europe. That's where the talent is. That's where the best coach is at. That's where the foundation's at. That's where they have kind of figured out the soccer model, like you guys were saying. U.S., for whatever reason, I don't know, we're just too good for it, or at least we think we're too good. But definitely having the other models throughout Europe and seeing how successful they have been over the years, and even with watching the Netherlands goalie, she played for Arsenal. You know, having that name Arsenal, that's bringing in so much a lot of money as well. And especially with the women's team, like you said, with Man City and Barca, just based off their names and just their logo and just their how worldwide they're known, they're gonna bring money in right away. But let's say a female team like the Orlando Pride, yeah, like you said, you might get 2,000 women or 2,000 fans to go to that. But imagine if that talent goes over to Europe, that also now America, they bring over that talent to America. Now that 2,000 will turn into 3,000, will turn into 5,000, so forth and so on. But we are so far behind the eight ball when it comes to the world and how we run our system here. It feels like we're always behind the eight ball. It feels like we're always kind of chasing them. And I have a friend who's diehard U.S. men's, you know, soccer team. I'm not. I might be the only oddball out here. I don't see it. He goes, oh, but they played over in Europe for 2 or 3 years. I go, yeah, that's it. And they come back and they play for the MLS.
Yeah.
Like, we need to stay over there for much longer than at the tail end of their career. Come over here and develop our system. But having a little coffee over in Europe, we are going to fall further and further behind men and women as the women throughout the world are catching up. And it's awesome to see that. Don't get me wrong. I love to see the women, you know, four-time world champions. However, it's going to come a time and place where these other countries, naturally, they are going to catch up. I really just think because we're coming over here for the college level of soccer and going back over there. And I think that's why the other teams are becoming a little better. It's awesome to see that, too.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think the collegiate sports model, too, it seems to only be beneficial for one sport, and that's American football.
Yes.
Outside of that, it really doesn't make sense for anybody who's an elite-level athlete to even go to pursue college sports. Even track and field, these guys are going at 18 years old, and they're like, well, it's why. It's better competition. I'm getting better coaching, and I'm actually able to rest my body much more effectively. So moving forward, I agree with you 100%. You know, Arsenal's had the dominant women's program in England for quite a long time, and it wasn't until a lot of the biggest clubs have recently started to put their resources behind it had they been coming up. But, yeah, I can see that being an issue, unless, of course, the U.S. does the right thing and catches on saying, no, we need to follow the same model. And so if that happens, I think the U.S. is going to continue to be dominant, mainly because the U.S. women are growing up with more access to just sporting opportunity. But
But if you look at women's sports here in America,
the model is what's scary.
If you look at what they have in here in America for women, it's only soccer or softball. That's really it. Maybe basketball, but not a lot of sports like the men do. You know, so right there, you are kind of pigeonholing some of these girls to play and continues to play soccer for us to be at that very top level. That's
right.
Why here, you know, for the men, we have baseball, hockey, football, so forth and so on. Then you get soccer kind of come in the 1970s, and with the European sport, yeah, that's kind of cute. You go play, run around kind of thing. In the 80s and 90s, also the sport has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, where now people are thinking, like us, can we compete with the world? Can we go over to Europe? Can we do all this? But I think it's got to take a lot of time, money, resources, a lot of failure. I love failure. I hate it, but I love it because it's how we get better. And again, I just think Americans, our federation, I don't know if we're just too thick-headed or what, or we have bad leadership. But I'm a huge fan of being relegated, excuse me. And if we had that system here in America, oh my God, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, they will actually get bigger and they might get a better stadium. So even if you start having that kind of model here in America, we'll slowly build it up. It's getting popular more and more and more. However, we need to have a better model here. And I think the Federation needs to kind of mirror some of the better ones over in Europe or just throughout the world kind of thing. I think with, the first MLS team, the Premier, we have 24 teams. The second division, we have like 36 teams or something like that. Right there, we have 60 teams. Why can't we make three divisions out of that? The top four or the bottom three drop, top three of the second division rise up, so forth and so on. I think with that, then, wow, I can see Wayne Rooney come down here and play my Tampa Bay Rowdies. Awesome. I will spend money now going to that game. I'm going to bring it to my friend. I'm going to maybe have a beer or two. Now I'm bringing more money into the stadium. Now they can purchase bigger names. So it really kind of goes all hand in hand in hand. But, again, I don't know if we're just too thick-headed to kind of pull our heads out of our butts to kind of wake up. There's so much money here in America, like billions of dollars, and untapped money, and I just don't know why they can't see that. Maybe you guys have more of an insight.
I'll play devil's advocate, though, because I'm a big fan of relegation, too. I think it works.
Yeah.
But I also realized and have made this point.
Phil, you should definitely bring up your points because you did make some good points on that.
That it's bad for future planning. Businesses, sponsorships like consistency, and having a lack of relegation in a closed system has enabled them to develop and prevented teams from making really bad financial decisions, which is what we don't want to see happen. It's brought a measure of stability, and you see even in Europe them trying to move away from a system that's open, that has relegation, to a more closed model. Why else do we hear every 4 years talk about a European Super League? The big clubs want to know that they have guaranteed revenue year in, year out, and that they have a set schedule, and that's what they're looking for. I think given the opportunity, you would see Manchester United, Man City, Arsenal, the biggest teams, pull out of their leagues and play in the European Super League where they could be guaranteed revenue and they could go out to a B Sky B or a Fox Sports and negotiate a deal that's akin to what NFL football makes, where you're bringing in $3 billion, $4 billion a season in commercial revenue, because you know exactly what the product that you're going to get would be. So I think relegation is a great thing. I think it brings a lot of excitement. But at the same time, it really hamstrings teams, and I think that it would actually harm future development because you would have players, people looking to buy players as opposed to trying to develop them. What's the incentive for playing your kids if you're in a relegation battle? You don't have it. Right now, they need to be incentivized to play kids. You know, just like we need to be incentivized to allow for the women to develop. I think, you know, the college system has been great. It has helped. I think the reason why we saw Jamaica in the Women's World Cup was because of U.S. college soccer. And while that's great for the rest of the world, I am worried that it might eventually hamstring the U.S. women's team. I think that college soccer in women's soccer is starting to have the same net effect that MLS soccer is having for the men, whereas the rest of the region is developing and is gaining more out of it exponentially than the U.S. is, right? Mm-hmm. The U.S. men have become so reliant on MLS that we're not getting the same type of training. What needs to happen is that the rising tide needs to lift all ships. Well, it's lifting some more than others, because all of a sudden you're seeing these women and men. I think that Haiti and Jamaica are both products of the MLS and the U.S. soccer system, where they're having access to better coaching at a younger level than they had had previously. And as a result, these places are catching us. Now,
See that leading to more exposure for those countries, though, and all of a sudden here comes the European team starting to smell around Haiti a bit more because they haven't been over there since the 70s. So That's great, that raises all ships. Yeah.
That's all well and great for Haiti, and that's all well and great for Jamaica, but that's not doing anything for the U.S. My biggest fear
But it will. If we go over to Europe, because Europe will bring us up. Because our ultimate goal is to compete with Europe and maybe some South American countries. And that's about it. Everyone else thinks more or less kids are our butts. But we're trying to chase Europe, just like how Haiti's trying to chase us. I think it's just a natural progression of soccer. I just think that you always want to be the best. Whatever the model is ahead of you, you want to chase that. You want to keep up with the Joneses kind of thing. And I think by Europe and having all their players and now some of us are going over there, again, American soccer is going to take so long. It's going to take longer than baseball, football, hockey, all that stuff for our studs to be worldwide players and to be well-known worldwide players just because we have so many different sports. But we're chasing that European model. And if we can ever chase that, we might be, you know, going past the round of 16 in the World Cup. As of right now, that's the extent that we're going to cap at because we're not over there. They don't want our players. We're just not at that caliber yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we're starting to see more, and we'll touch on this in a little bit.
Yeah.
I just want to bring up my last point about the women before we move on. I think my biggest fear is that the restrictions on movement and the pay is we're actually going to have some people who are U.S. eligible start to select other nationalities because they can, and that the revenue that they can make by playing in Europe is superior to what they can make in the U.S. So this young lady who's U.S. eligible might decide, hey, you know what?
My grandmother's Swedish.
I'm going to go and play for the Swedish national team because then I have access to the Women's Premier League. I can start playing professionally at age 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still going to get there. And not only are we going to – we're going to start to lose some talent that we may find valuable. My last point would be this. Like, you know, I read a FIFA stat. They said there are 13.6 million women playing soccer right now. Of them, 9 million play in the U.S., so we just have this immensely huge talent pool, which is what has kept – but unless we continue to invest in its development and unless we continue to pay them when they develop, we're not going to continue to have that. We're not going to be that far ahead of everybody else.
But they can – and they're also going to take a page out of the women's basketball game because you're already seeing WNBA players who go over and play in Russia – and that's where they make all their money, and they're even taking seasons off from the WNBA because they know, well, I don't want to get injured here and then lose my opportunity to get paid $1 million when I'm getting paid, you know, $75,000-$80,000 to play in the WNBA. So you can see that you can see that same sort of situation kind of creeping over to women's soccer when you having a women's team that's affiliated with DC United or a women's team that's affiliated with Manchester City, pretty sure you know where the resources are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and real quick, and even you see this in college football, that the kid who is not going to go to the championship game, his bowl game, whatever team he's playing for, is going to sit out that bowl game because a chance is for his first round draft pick.
Absolutely.
Same idea. I get it. It's all about money. You're going to put your money.
I didn't regret that kid at all. I didn't begrudge him at all. I was like, smart move, kid. Smart move.
Yep. And the same thing with the women. If the money isn't here, and they might play here because like the WNBA, because that's what you're supposed to do, and blah blah blah. Of course they're going to Russia. That's where the money's at. So they're going to chase that money. They might take off a year here just for that money. We would do the same thing. If we're at that caliber, if we're professionals, shoot. We worked our butts off for 27 years to get where we are. I'm going to chase that money too. And you see that all in soccer. You see Gareth Bale going over to Real Madrid to chase that money and stuff like that. Can't blame the guy, you know, kind of thing. We would do the same thing. Money talks.
Absolutely.
So, Before we lose you, Coach G, I want to talk about the flip side of this, which was the men's final against Mexico, which, again, was my impression of it was there to be won. And I felt for all the good that Jill Ellis did in managing her players, her formation, her tactics with her substitutions and how she rotated her squad throughout the tournament, that was where Greg Berhalter failed. I have a lot of questions about his substitution, his tactics. You know, did he pull out Why was Josie Altidore substituted so early? His selection left a lot to be desired. His steadfast reliance on MLS players over European players, is this what's going to continue? I think the foundation was good. Coming from where we were to get to the final, to lose, albeit 1-0, to lose 1-0 in a final after having suffered for so long and basically having to start with a full reboot of the program, mm-hmm. it showed signs of progress. But I just feel like there was more there than we saw.
How do you feel about McKinney being captain, though, for the final? Because I was shocked by that. I didn't think he's got a couple goals, and he might be the next future, but Pulisic, he's not captain. Anyone else? I just felt that it was a kind of a poor choice on him, because as I was watching the game, McKinney, he was kind of walking around and not acting like a captain. You put Bradley in there, he's chasing down balls. He's a motor. He's running. He's going everywhere. I was watching McKinney. He did not look like a captain to me. So even based off of that, I question his decisions for who the people he has on the field, too, with that. And I absolutely agree with you. There are a lot of question marks with this from the game yesterday, from last night.
What I did see throughout the course of a tournament was, for the first time in a long time, I felt like we had a style of play that fit some of the players that we have on the team. I don't want to say it's the Barca model, but it is a more of a possession-based model. He needs to work on the lateral movement. Beerhalter himself said he wants more lateral movement, not so much north-south, but more east and west, switching up the field of play. I think that, Weston McKinney certainly capable of doing stuff like that. Tyler Adams was a big miss. I question some of the reliance. I think that, we don't properly use Josie Altidore, but I've also questioned whether Josie Altidore properly uses Josie Altidore.
Agreed. He's a big guy, too, but I see him on top of the box. Like, dude, you got to get in front of the goalie a lot of times. I agree. Josie
sucks
out Josie a lot of times.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think Josie needs to be willing to play more as a blunt force object than Josie is. I understand Beerhalter's love of Giassi Zardes, but Giassi Zardes' limitations have been manifest since he broke on to the U.S. men's national team. He's quick. Mm-hmm. He can run. Yeah. He has an awful first touch, and he's not a great shooter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I have yet to see him develop much beyond that in his tenure. Now, Beerhalter likes him because of his defensive work, and Josie's going to have to figure that one out. The wing play is going to become important.
But when did he figure that out, though? How many more games, how many more years does this guy have? He's been awesome for the last how many years? Yeah, he's number three right now in goal scoring. I can give her a ass butt, to be honest. I don't think he's a good player. I don't think he's that good of a player. I've never been a fan of him. I think he's overrated, to be honest.
I don't know who else we have to play in those positions right now.
That's the problem with U.S. soccer, though, is like, Mike, we talked about this. The coaching, like, the players aren't good enough to do what the coach wants them to do. And even to the point where athletically, like even from not necessarily from a soccer perspective, from a skill set, it's that, do they have the physical tools before they even think about it from a soccer perspective to be able to do that? We've talked about this before. This has been the knock on U.S. soccer for the longest time, is that the better athletes in the United States often leave soccer once they get into high school for greener pastures, because they know their opportunities to become wealthy and make money aren't going to lie in the game of soccer as an American player, except for the very, 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 very few. So you got to wonder, is the coach doing the right thing with this tactical setup that he's doing? Or should he be, Mike, we talked about this, how maybe Big Sam may have been a good choice for the United States because he's good at working with what he has.
I think, I do believe Big Sam would have been a good choice to work with what he has. What I saw from Greg Beerhalter, I think he has a lot of room to grow in the international game, and he's going to have to sit down and figure some stuff out. He got done by Tato Martino.
Mm-hmm.
He got absolutely coached off the pitch by Tato Martino. The decisions that Tato made dictated the game. And
that's a good coach, though. That's what we need.
That's what we need. And I guess the worst part was we could have had Tato Martino in. They easily could have hired him. He was sitting down in Atlanta. It's
in Atlanta.
Not like he took the job with Mexico light years before Greg Berhalter did. We're talking a matter of months. They didn't approach him. They could have had him. And you saw the difference that it made when he said, okay, this isn't working, but I see a hole here. We have, you know, they absolutely crushed him, Reem. We need to develop a left back. I thought we had one in Anthony Robinson, but we didn't bring him. You know, we're running around with Jordan Morris out on the wing. I'm not sure what his contributions were throughout the tournament. I think the only young player that I saw that really, really impressed me, showed me like they need to be a mainstay in the U.S. men's national team moving forward, who I hadn't heard of prior to the Gold Cup, with Aaron Long, the center back. And I thought he did a wonderful job, and he made it into the team in the tournament. But you know what you're going to get. You want to build a team around Christian Pulisic. Hopefully, what I would like to see is a team that lines up with Christian Pulisic on one side and Tim Weah on the other, and let them run, because that could be the best duo that we've had on the wing since Dempsey and Donovan.
How do you guys feel about number 14, Cannon, right defender?
Young kid.
What do you guys think about him?
I still think that that's the Andre Yedlin's position to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And Stead and I have talked about this. Yedlin, under Rafa Benitez, has turned into an actual legitimate right back with some quality. He is an international level right back. I think Reggie Cannon has the potential, but if I'm picking my back line right now and I've got a fully fit U.S. men's roster to choose from, I'm taking Yedlin. I'm taking John Anthony Brooks. I'll slot. I like Matt Miazga. I think he's as athletic as they come. Given Chelsea's status right now with the transfer ban, I think we actually might see him make some appearances in the Premier League, which I think would be mammoth for him.
Oh, my God. It'd be tremendous.
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
I think that would be mammoth for him, and I think that would be mammoth for the U.S. men's national team. I want to see how Weston McKennie continues to develop at Schalke.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tyler Adams is going to be a very, very important player. Again, these guys are all young. Most of the excitement in the U.S. men's national team is coming from the youth, but there are also guys that we're seeing an increasing number of them go over to Europe to develop.
Yes.
You've got McKinney over there. You've got Adams over there. You've got Weah, who just moved away from PSG, looking for more game time.
Played well at Celtic. Played really well at Celtic now, and now he's playing for Lille, who is a good club in the French league. That's going to be a great move for him.
A champion, a European-level French side, and he's going to be in there. It's not like he failed at PSG.
No, he didn't.
He left because their model is not to play guys like Tim Weah. Their model is to go out and get the next big thing. They want a Neymar. They want a Kylian Mbappe. There's nothing to be gained in PSG by paying and playing a 20-year-old American kid, even if he is George Weah's son. You developed him, you sell him on, you take 25% of his next contract, and let him move. I suspect that we're going to see Tim Weah in the Champions League and as a mainstay for the U.S. men's national team for multiple years to come.
I hope so.
Yeah. But I'm pretty hyped about Josh Sargent, man. I like that kid, man. He plays big. I think that he could actually be a prototypical center forward because he's 6'1", he's got good height, but he's thick and he's strong.
Yeah.
And, you know, let him grow into his man body. He could actually be what the Altidore should have been. I think he could probably be that player.
I think he would benefit from being over at Bremen playing in the Bundesliga.
Absolutely.
And that's one league that seems to have figured out like there is something in American youth soccer.
They pull a lot of guys.
Yeah, like Sebastian Soto, who starred in the 20 World Cup. He's going to be over there. I think, I would expect to see Anthony Robinson to get some more game time. There are some players in the younger side that we should see. Now, their focus was on let's get this team developed for the Olympics. But at the expense of the Gold Cup, I just I don't know. I think they could have used some senior minutes, some of those guys that were playing down a level this year. And I really think while there was a lot of positive, you know, we saw a lot of good from the U.S. men in the course of the tournament, it was like the reverse. It was like I felt like they fulfilled the role of the Netherlands or England to Mexico's U.S. Women in this tournament, where they were the upstart. You can see where it's going, but the coaching needs to improve, the development needs to improve. The difference is, I don't know if we necessarily have the time to wait around and hope that this project pays dividends. You know, we've the Nations League coming up, starting in October. We were drawn against Canada and Haiti. So that'll get real interesting real quick. And then that's the next competitive. We won't play another competitive tournament again until World Cup qualifying and the next Gold Cup.
Which is awesome because that's what we need. We need some time to see what we have and see how we can get better from this tournament. Again, you give more time for the coaching staff to pick the brains a little bit more. I think it's a great thing that we don't really have a lot of major tournaments or major games coming up within the next 2 or 3 months. I think a good little layoff would be a beneficial thing for us.
Yeah. So,
but these kids got to get first team action in European games. I mean, that's the best thing for them. They just have to get it. And until they get that consistently, we're not going to see any real improvement in the U.S. team from an international perspective. We're just not going to see it. And as long as you're relying on players who are playing in an playing in the MLS schedule, who are not aligned with the top players in the rest of the world, it's just not going to change. And I think the only hope they have is to put. I mean, if you're over 25 and your name is not Michael Bradley or DeAndre Yedlin, not sure you should hang around too much anymore. Get these young kids in there, get them working together, and especially the ones that are playing in Europe. I mean, I mean, this could be Josie's last tournament, and I would be fine. You know, it's just not worth it anymore.
Agreed.
I feel like the big difference is competition, and by that I mean competition, the level that they play at, and the competition for spots. Think about how hard it is. The level that you have to play at, how good you have to be, how hard you have to fight on a day-in, day-out basis to be a part of the women's national team. Because you've got people, you've got the Megan Rapinos who are there at 34. You've got Carly Lloyd at 36 hanging around saying, hey, look, I'm not ready to give up the ghost on this one yet. You've got
to
fight for I wouldn't blame them either. But you've got them saying, look, you want my spot? I'm not giving
you. You better come get it. Yeah.
You got to come
get around
it.
If you try to get
it. That's what we want, though.
Yeah, that's what you want. Yeah.
But I don't feel like – and so just to be able to get that contract to play on the U.S. women's national team, to play in NWSL at that level, just to get that contract, how hard you have to work. Whereas – for the men, it seems like it's a little bit too easy for them. Oh, you couldn't make it over at Stoke? Here, come over and
come on back. Yep.
Come on back. You're guaranteed a spot in the men's national team when you want it. You know, you don't worry about it.
Yep.
You had a little coffee over here. Cool. We'll put you on the national team. And we've always had these major under 21 kids that are coming with so much potential. They go to Europe, they come back, and we're kind of stuck in this awful cycle. So when is the coaching staff, when's someone going to break this cycle and do exactly what you guys are saying? You know, put them over there, and if you're not worth it, all right, let's on to the next one. Let's see if we can find that diamond in the rough that could be here for the next 15 years to be the leader and to bring the men up to the next level, you know. Nothing's really panning out. We've all this potential, but when is it going to come through? You know, you said Yedlin's fantastic right now over in Europe. He's got a fantastic coach. So just imagine if we had a really top-notch coach here, how that guy can bring up, you know, America. I like Bruce Arenas a long time ago in the team that he has, but ever since then, we don't really have that quality of a team. We have good players, but a team, I don't see it. So... you know, all the suggestions that you guys said, there's probably 10 more that we need to talk about and stuff like that. But I don't know if there's a magic pill to swallow to fix all this. I don't know. It just seems like it's so, again, I don't know if Americans are just so thick-headed that we don't want to hire a Hispanic coach for our national coach, even though he's phenomenal. I don't know if we're just too arrogant. I have no idea.
I can't seem to get that. It's weird. I agree with you completely. It doesn't seem to make any sense, the reason why this why are they bringing in coaches that really have no pedigree when they're coaches who are readily available, who've even shown interest in the U.S. team, who aren't even getting interviews. I mean, I don't understand that.
I don't get it either.
How can we compete even in our own hemisphere? How can we compete in the whole world if we have people that want the jobs and our federation's like, no, we want this other guy? It's so hard. It's still like a slap in the face to all of us. They want us to go to the next level. They want us to have these superstars. So many people are so frustrated with all this stuff, and there's such poor leadership. I have no idea, but there's so much potential there. I kind of get sick and tired. I'm a Cubs fan. I'm a born and raised in Chicago, so I've gone through heartaches through my whole entire life. So I'm okay with the men's team because I've been through this. Like, but potential, we just don't live up to it. And eventually, something needs to snap here. We need a Madden to come to the team more or less to bring the World Cup team to the last couple rounds of knockout stages and stuff like that. We can't go to the round of 16 and be happy with that. We're done with that. That was back in the 1980s and 90s. We should be moving on now. You know, with all the population that we have here, we have over 330 million, and we can't even get a good soccer team.
Yeah,
something's wrong with that.
Especially with the immigrant population.
Well,
there's so many people who are the first generation of Hispanic and African descent who love the game, who grew up playing the game. There's no reason why they can't get a better soccer team. I don't get it. I don't understand.
I think it's a matter of development, and I've always hated that. Well, we're a nation of 330 million, and we can't get 23 guys to beat Trinidad. No, we can't get the right 23 guys that we need to do it because there are 23 guys out there that can do it.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to be able to identify them, develop
the
them,
coaching.
Train
the coaching.
Them,
yep.
and coach
them. Put
them
in the right
it's
spot.
Not a
and
matter,
stuff like that.
It is not a matter. We have the players. We have the talent. Do we have – we may not have a Kylian Mbappe. We may not have a Paul Pogba. But
we do.
Somewhere here in America.
We've got to find them.
You know, you have to be realistic with some of these kids kind of thing. You know, like football. Like, you're not good at football, go to rugby. If you're not good at rugby, like, whatever. But a lot of these parents, and me being a high school teacher, a lot of these parents, you know, fill these kids' heads like you're the next, you're the next Michael Jordan. Let's be realistic here. You know, let's put the kids in the right sports where they can succeed in it. And I think if we do that, man, our soccer will go through the roof. I think we have the right people on the right, you know, on the right. Everything needs to be right, more or less. The stars, you know, Taylor, the soccer guy, everyone needs a blessing on America for everything to line up for us to even compete.
Well, Coach G, really want to thank you for your time. It's really
man.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Love to have you back on another time.
Love
absolutely.
To have you back on. So great job. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, I had fun, man. I definitely enjoyed it. I'm definitely more sober now, so it's time for a drink. So I appreciate you guys, and I look forward to talking to you guys again. So I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, man.
Thanks, guys.
So,
bye.
Before we move on, and I do want to touch a little bit on the African Cup of Nations and put a nice bow on these two finals, but I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. I don't know where exactly you were on Sunday, Stead, but it was hopping down there. Everybody was out. Everybody was cheering. There were even a few Dutch fans that came out.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
It was really a really good time. Very enthusiastic crowd. Everybody was happy.
Yeah.
And
I
there
was
to cheer
on
the
Foggy Bottom, so I guess I shouldn't be too surprised. In
there
Georgetown.
Was a huge, and there was a huge watch party down at National Harbor as well. So definitely some good watch parties and a lot of fun out there. So even though the international tournament season for the U.S. is now over, the Premier League's right around the corner. You can catch the ICC games, especially that Arsenal-Real Madrid game.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to go down to the stadium, go on out to Flanagan's, 44 Cordell Avenue. They'll take good care of you. So
absolutely.
I definitely thought that going back and putting a nice bow on this conversation about it, how do we feel about Saturday in terms of the larger picture where it puts us for U.S. or Sunday, where it puts us for U.S. soccer?
Well,
do we feel good? Do we feel bad? Do we feel indifferent? Where do we feel the programs, where the overall status of the federation is after the finals on Sunday?
Well, I mean, I will say that first thing I need to say this about FIFA. FIFA, that was not, I mean, three finals on one Sunday is really, really, I think that's poor management by FIFA. I don't know. I don't really agree with that at all. I mean, it could make for a fun day. My wife and I were out and we were at a, we just went to a little spot to just kind of hear some music. And there were people there who were watching, who were wearing U.S. jerseys as well as Brazil jerseys, as well as, you know, Peru jerseys, because Peru final for the first time in a Copa America. And while that's all well and good, I don't know. I think a World Cup final should have its own day. As far as the state of U.S. soccer is concerned, I feel like we're still in the same position. I can't say that much has really changed. I wasn't surprised by anything. I don't think the U.S. men's team really had a game that really, really tested them until they played in the semifinals and finals, and even the semifinal game wasn't a game that you would see on a larger international tournament. Because you got to think of it this way. I mean, where does the Gold Cup rank when it comes to international tournaments that are regional? It's probably pretty low. And
probably the last.
It's probably the last one. You're right. It's the last one. So as far as the women are concerned, I mean, there really wasn't any surprises on my end. I think the women's program is currently healthy, but for all the reasons that we were stating before, and especially some really great points that that you and Patrick brought up, there is a need to make sure you're planning appropriately. Of course, you can't say there's a moment for concern when you just won your fourth World Cup, but they should be looking out long term if they want to maintain their level of dominance. I think for the men, I really hope this was the last tournament for a lot of these older guys. I really hope that You know, the men truly see the benefits of playing in Europe. And you may not have liked Jurgen Klinsmann or agree with Jurgen Klinsmann, but he was right. You have to play against the best competition. You have to be fighting for spots. You have to understand that you can't have things given to you, because we see this so often that a player goes over to Europe, has a kickabout, doesn't really like it, gets a starting position for an MLS squad, and thinks that they're then ready to compete at a high level at an international stage. And it's just not happening. So, I mean, the U.S. is going to continue to be compared with countries like Haiti and Canada, which isn't right. But it's going to continue until this current model for the U.S. men changes. And I think it all goes back to the inability to hire the men's coach, that long gap that we talked about frequently on. And as well, we should have talked about that frequently, because that was a huge gap by U.S. soccer. And even though they finaled, I can't say that they're playing good. I can't say it's this great game to watch. You even said it. That was Mexico's like B minus team. So it's just not there yet. But you know, I think we have to give the coach a bit more time. But I just don't see things changing much in the future. I think the U.S. will qualify for the next World Cup. If they get into an easy group, they can get to a round of 16, but that'll be about it. And they'll get to a round of 16 by getting hopefully a win and probably a loss and a draw or two draws and sneak through and then lose again. So they'll have a quote unquote successful World Cup, even though they've only won one game. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I can't say that I'm genuinely excited. So I feel like we're still treading water in the same spot.
I am immensely happy for the ladies, and you know, all the biggest congratulations, four times.
Absolutely, they deserve all the credit.
They're basically
carrying U.S. soccer.
And this was a team effort. It was perhaps not as dominant as the finals and the finals of last year. So I can see where our position at the top of the women's pantheon of soccer is secure, but I also see where people are starting to catch up with us, and we need to start planning for the future now. As mm-hmm. far as the men, there are certainly opportunities there. But are we in a position to take them?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even blame Greg. I think Greg Berhalter needs to learn. I think the players need to learn. And I hope if they do, they come out and they're a better team. We see that a fixture in October and November in the Nation League. Because that's another tournament that is set up for the U.S. to eventually play Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to get over that hoodoo. You know, I think it's 5 of the last 6 competitive matches against Mexico now we've lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see why Mexico is that much stronger than us, other than the fact that their players go over to Europe to play
mm-hmm.
where ours don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that would be the biggest difference that I see.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that we learn. I think that there's signs of promise, but I think that the men's program, they need to step up their game.
They do.
And
they need to raise serious expectations, and they have to put more pressure on the coaches and these players to perform. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
They really do, yeah.
So overall, I would say that it was a successful summer for both for the project as a whole, certainly for U.S. women, came, saw, conquered. The men, I feel like, left something out there. They grew into the style of play. They got some competitive matches, but I feel like they left something out there. There was an opportunity there against the Mexico team when you were up, and had they put away a couple of chances, and allowed Mexico to grow into the game and take over the game as better teams do, we might have had an opportunity to pick up a trophy and win.
Right.
And I think that would have done big things for their development.
Yeah, right. But, you know, but we saw it in the game, though. Josie with a great opportunity, and what did he do? He put it wide. I mean, I tried not to react, but I couldn't help it. I just shook my head, started laughing, because I was out, and I had a pop up on my Bleacher Report, and I just watched the highlight, and I just shook my head.
And then we see what Mexico ends up doing.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
It's right down the right side. So, of course, there were other tournaments. Brazil run out 3-1 victors. They beat Peru, who after having beat Argentina. Messi gets sent off for the second time in his career. Bit of a shocker there.
Yeah.
And Gabby Jesus, if there's a soccer version of a Gordie Howe hat trick, he hit it.
Yeah.
Goal, assist, red card.
Red card.
Gotta love it. So, guessing that soccer equivalent of a Gordie Howe hat trick right there. The goal, the assist, and the penalty. We got a goal, an assist, and a red card. So, in a 3-1 victory, Brazil capturing the Copa America. 12 years they've gone without a international tournament win.
Yeah. Interesting situation, too, how who was the Brazilian player? I think it was I can't think of his name all right off the bat, but he was talking about how, you know, he finds it disrespectful that Messi would say what he said about the referees for Copa America, because he says, when we played against you and you guys beat us 6-1 as Barcelona, you basically were the referee of that game. So it's amazing how when things go your way, you're off the side.
Yeah. I remember the quote. I can't remember exactly who it was who said it, but I do remember the quote. Also, we've got the African Cup of Nations. Going into their quarterfinal round. And there are still some teams left in there that you don't normally think about. Madagascar has made it through.
Yep.
They're in the round. So is Benin. Egypt goes out. The, what is it, 7-time champions? The 37-year wait for Ghana continues as they go out in the round of 16.
To a strong Tunisia side. Yeah, the Nigeria-Cameroon game was the game to watch, though. That was an exciting game. Very exciting.
I don't know exactly how the matchups play out and if this is possible. I am at some point looking forward to a Nigeria-Senegal game.
Yes.
Because I feel like that could be the immovable object versus the irresistible force.
Mm-hmm.
Nigeria's attack coming up against that defense led by Kalidou Koulibaly. That could be a really interesting one. Mm-hmm. And it pits a young, exciting Nigerian team, one that, you know, this is a team that won the bronze medal at the Olympics, you know, like a lot of other teams. And this is why, again, I say, you know, there's potential in the U.S., a team that I think is greater than the sum of its than its individual parts. You know, you've got the Alex Iwobis, you've got Odion Ighalo, you've got those guys in there who may not necessarily be the biggest names on the international level, but when they play and they put on that Nigeria shirt, they play well together and they're very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited about them, but I have confessed on multiple times my love of Alou Cisse and the Senegalese coach, and I think he's done a wonderful job there. I talked about him last summer, one of my favorite coaches in the World Cup last year, and
he's got a talented
squad.
Yeah, they did get hard done, and they have a talented squad, that Senegalese team.
And I think that that's one to watch. Of course, Tunisia, Algeria, two good, solid North African teams. It's nice to see representation from the likes of Benin, who are still in it. A team that I am going to confess I don't know much about, and I don't know if I could pick out anybody who played for them.
I was looking at some of the lineups, too, for Madagascar, and just pronouncing those names is a challenge enough as it is. But you know what's cool is though is you're going to see a Tunisia or a Madagascar in a semifinal because they're matched up in the quarterfinals. So that's going to be you know you're getting some fun here. This is going to be you're getting some exciting games to go on here. So
it is one of my favorite tournaments to watch.
Yeah,
and
I'm
always
just so glad we get to watch it.
Yes. I'm so glad that we get to watch it. It's a great tournament to watch if you're a casual soccer fan. It's easy to get behind a lot of these teams. Some of them you don't see because World Cup qualifying in Africa is such a weird process.
It is weird, yeah.
And it oftentimes creates a situation where some of the teams that would be successful get eliminated very, very, very early. You know, you had Uganda making it into the last 16. They lost and then fired their coach, who then took over, then went to Egypt to coach domestic soccer there. Egypt, they go out and they immediately fire their coach. A disappointing tournament for the hosts.
Right, absolutely.
But I think of the teams remaining, Algeria has been to a World Cup.
Yeah, Algeria can beat anybody in Africa. They can beat anybody in Africa, absolutely.
Tunisia, we talked about a team that made the World Cup. Not necessarily – they didn't necessarily perform that well in the World Cup, but they made it. I just love that their nickname is the – I think they're the Lions – the Eagles of Carthage.
Yeah. Hold on a second. I got to look that up now. That's too good. I got to look that up.
Yeah, I believe the Tunisian nickname is the
they're called the Carthage Eagles.
The Carthage
Carthage Eagles. Yeah, that's great.
Not to be confused with the Nigerian Super Eagles.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, these African teams got some great names because, you know, you got to love the elephant. That's a great name for Ivory Coast. You got to love that.
And they embrace it. I remember back when Cameroon was the big up. confusion. Out, you know, transfer rumors abound. Today's latest was that Neymar has effectively gone on strike at PSG.
Yes. Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up because I don't know if this is anything new. Maybe it's just being reported on a lot more. But, you know, the players who are really putting their foot down about where they're going to play and where they're going to play, and you're looking at Atletico Madrid is not pleased with Antoine Griezmann right now with the way he's talking about and flirting with Barcelona and stuff. But then, you know, you're not sure what the teams are saying, if it's accurate or if it's correct or if they're just putting press releases out. But and then you hear Bale is still beefing with Real Madrid and everything, and you're hearing that Paul Pogba's just saying I'm not going to Manchester United. It's getting pretty ugly here. And you know, with Neymar talking about going, Neymar is an interesting one because the way he left Barcelona in the first place was not very you know, kosher. That was pretty. It seemed like he just didn't want to be behind Messi anymore or something like that. And now he's talking about going back. I don't know. I think this also reached though to what we've talked about before, is that all is not right in the water over at PSG.
So, hey, real quick, I think we have our African soccer expert on. Ime, are you there?
Oh, excellent.
Paul, can we get Ime on if he's there? Yeah. Hey, Ime, you there?
Whoa. Yeah, just to backtrack, you said African soccer expert. I'm African. I like soccer. I don't know about the expert part, though.
I was trying to pay you a compliment.
On our show, you know more than us. You're an expert.
I appreciate it.
We were just talking about Nigeria, and I needed somebody to talk about Nigeria, and who better to call in to talk about Nigeria than a Nigerian?
That's awesome, mate. I have to confess, I've been trying to keep up with the African Cup of Nations. So my boy Mike reached out to me ahead of the call, and I told him I'll try my best to call in. Work has been crazy, so my apologies. And that has actually affected me keeping up with the African Cup of Nations, which is apparently a lot of things are happening and I'm missing it. And I missed your call as well, so I missed everything you guys talked about. But I'll do my best. And who am I speaking to? Who's the other person on the line?
Oh, you got Armstead too. Half the two guys. Now, by way of full disclosure, Ime is a big Manchester United fan, both because he's a huge Manchester United fan and he's just physically large. So,
I appreciate that, man.
What have you seen in your – what you've been able to follow of Nigeria thus far, what have – in the African Cup of Nations, what have been your overall impressions of the tournament?
I saw the Cameroon game. First of all, I was actually blown away that Seydorf is actually coaching Cameroon. That's an aside. But the game, I don't know. As Nigerian, I've not been impressed with our team for a while. I think we had a good showing last World Cup. That's compared to our performance over the last couple of World Cups and African Cup of Nations. The team that won the African Cup of Nations, I believe, two or three cups ago, I think was a decent team. And that was a bright spot given the performance up until that point. Since then, they kind of like, you know, returned back to the lack of performance. And then last year at the World Cup, I was impressed. The quality, the passing was definitely something reminiscent of our golden years. That said, the game against Cameroon, it wasn't the flash, the dash, the control that I expect from at least growing up watching my team play. So it's been okay. I don't know if we're great enough to win the cup. If we do, that'll be awesome. Hopefully, maybe it's something positive going forward that we can build on. But in a nutshell, our performance is okay. I don't know if it's quality enough to win the Cup of Nations.
So if you don't think Nigeria would be the favorite, who would you look at as being amongst the last eight, the toughest team, the favorites to win it all?
After what South Africa did, I don't know, man. I really don't know. So I didn't see the game against South Africa. I know it was a major upset. Well, I'm definitely going to have to go with Nigeria. Just that's what my heart is. Even though they're not playing well, I just hope they make it through. Maybe South Africa.
Mm. Have you seen any of Senegal?
No, I haven't seen Senegal play. What are your thoughts?
I like Senegal. I think that they have a really strong setup, you know, back to front. When you've got Sadio Mane in attack and then you've got Koulibaly in defense, you're set up for some pretty good things. They've also got a fairly strong midfield. I like that team. I think that they're good. I totally forgot about the South African team. That's the little team that could.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting mix of big teams, ones that I would expect in Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria, and Senegal, and then some teams that you probably wouldn't expect to see, Benin, Madagascar, and South Africa. And then, of course, Algeria and Tunisia rounding out the final eight. I think it's going to be an interesting mixture of teams going forward. And, you know, you have the possibility. This has been a tournament of upsets. I didn't think that South Africa were going to make it to the final eight. I definitely didn't think that Madagascar would get that far. I thought that Ghana and Cameroon would do better. I was surprised that Egypt at home, given their dominance in this tournament, tripped over the first hurdle in the knockout.
I know, against South Africa, and I think that's why I'm putting them out there. You know,
well, the South Africa team is really surprising too. I mean they're relatively experienced when it comes just from a professional standpoint. They don't have a lot of caps. I mean, their most capped player on their squad has 50 caps. So it's surprising that they've been able to have this kind of run that they're having. But that's always like. That's the kind of team that seems to beat Nigeria. You know what I mean? Like you look at historically speaking, that when they've really kind of gotten deeper into certain tournaments, they go against a team that everyone expects them to kind of run through. All of a sudden, they get beat. So
that's
I totally get your anxiety about the upcoming game against South Africa because on paper Nigeria should basically run through this team for 3-0.
We'll see. But South Africa has. At least they're one of those teams that in the last like 10, 15 years that sort of been a name, you know, out there. You know, we never heard of South Africa like in the 80s, but you know, late 90s or 2000s. So they might not have players with a lot of caps.
How much of that is due to the World Cup being there in 2010?
I mean, this was what I'm speaking of was before that. You know, they were competing against Nigeria in the Cup of Nations, and they were challenging.
Right.
They were really challenging. I believe they won one Cup of Nations. I don't have.
They won in '94 or '96 or something like that. They did win one. Yeah.
And I think that was like the coming out party. And ever since then, when I see South Africa, I never rule them out. So them beating Egypt is not a surprise for me. And I think, you know, they're definitely going to be a team to beat. And is Ghana still in this? Somebody please help me out.
No, Ghana got knocked out.
Lost on penalty to Tunisia.
Okay, fair. Not a bad loss. Not a bad loss. Ivory Coast is still in this.
Ivory Coast is playing Algeria. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's going to be a good one.
Like
my boy said, it's up in the air, man. Anybody could take this right now. I mean, you have some Giants that have been knocked out. You don't know. Anything could happen. So.
Well, I want to thank you for chiming in. I'll be it ever so briefly.
Appreciate it,
we'll get you back on later on in the tournament to check on the fortunes of Nigeria. So thanks a lot, Ime.
No worries. You guys be well. Thank you for the opportunity. Have fun. Enjoy the games, all right?
Yeah, hope to be back sometime.
So that was Ime. He has more insight into he's being humble. He has a little bit more insight into Nigeria than he likes to let on. But as we get out of here, this one went quickly, as they all do. You know, want to make sure. Minted board. Alumni Association of Central Florida. So congratulations to producer Paul. for keeping us on, and good work. Hopefully you enjoy that new role. Want to give a shout out to our sponsor, as always, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle. Thank you for keeping us on the air and enabling the two guys to be the two guys, even when we're, well, today we were four guys. And big shouts out to you, Mr. Stead, for another successful show. So as we shuffle off, and this will be my last show for a couple of weeks, as I am going to go on a much needed, long overdue vacation.
Yes,
so
sir.
I will be gone, and we will have a cast of millions fill in for me. Actually, it's a trained goat named Sean.
Yeah.
I'll bid you a farewell. But your final thoughts as we end this show and we wrap up kind of the international summer.
Yeah, my final thoughts are to check out this. You know, we have a good week of international matches with the African Cup of Nations going on. But also, you know, with the final coming up next Friday. But also, I'd say my final thought is to hope that the transfer market is a bit less dramatic than what we're seeing with the NBA right now.
I don't think anything could do that. I don't think anything could do that. I know this isn't an NBA podcast, but yeah. Thanks a lot for waking me up at 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, Kwai. My phone just blew up. It shook me out of a perfectly good sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, though, we could start to see that, though, if some of these moves. Remember, Antoine Griezmann still.
Mm-hmm.
Completed. There's still some names out there. I think now that we've come to the end of the tournament season and pre-season training is starting, we're going to see some more urgency with these moves as guys want to get their full roster in for training
mm-hmm.
camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know for a fact, I'd be shocked if both Antoine Griezmann and Neymar both end up back at Barcelona. I just don't think there's enough room on the team for both of them. Nor is there enough money to buy both of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see, you know, Atletico is holding them hostage over that Griezmann draw negotiation. And it's going to be real interesting to see how that proceeds. They're talking about taking them to court and trying to find out if there was an agreement that was made ahead of time when his release clause was high. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes, what Neymar is going to do. This breakup at PSG just seems like it's destined for bad things.
Mm-hmm, I
predict that the last time you see Paul Pogba in a United jersey will be in a friendly.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if they can get that negotiated, he's going back to Juve. And where Juve is getting the money that they are spending
this
summer,
no
I
idea.
Have no idea.
This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous.
I know
yeah.
that there are a lot of – nailed on to see him back at Pogba back at Juve, which may be a good thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Real Madrid is particularly going to suit him. He can't seem to stay focused consistently through a season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So interesting. So we do have the potential for a NBA-esque weekend if all
mm-hmm.
things develop.
Absolutely.
And we will keep track of that. Only a couple more weeks, and your team will be here playing in the D.C. area.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you're excited.
I am excited. I am excited. You know, I'm always excited until I see how much the tickets cost. But hopefully, I can get down there and at least just see whoever they have who happens to make it on the quest runner, make it on the. I think that would be fun.
So, well, yeah. It has been fun. It's been a good show. We did good this week. We'll try and do better next week. For producer Paul, for Stead, I'm Mike. This has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. Stead, parting word as we go out?
Parting word is pass the baton to you because your parting words are always more interesting than mine. What you got?
Boondoggle.
Bet. Let's go out on that, brother.
Boondoggle. All right. Once again, thank you very much. We did good this week. We'll try and do better next week.